Nice to be back with you all again. And this time we'll be discussing the story of Dhruva Maharaj and the section that we're in right now is the prayers that Dhruva Maharaj offered to Lord Vishnu. Just yesterday, we heard some of the details of, we heard what happened after he was instructed by Narada in the process of bhakti. He went to Madhuvan, and in Madhuvan, he began his practices. Meanwhile, Narada went to visit his father, Uttanapada, who was a wreck, just in terrible distress over neglect of his son, the way that he had dealt with his son and didn't even know if he was alive. And Narada reassured him, not only he's alive, he's a celebrity already around the whole universe. And he'll be back shortly, perfected being, no worries. Then it shifted to Dhruva and what he did. The instructions given to him by Narada were followed perfectly. Emphasis goes to the degree of austerities he did for the first month, second month, third month. And by the time he reached the fifth month, he had completely controlled his breathing process. The universal airs were being choked, and the demigods went to Lord Vishnu, "Help, can't breathe." And Vishnu said, "Don't worry, it's just a son of King Uttanapada, a small boy, doing some severe austerities. I'll go at once and stop him from those austerities, and everything will be all right." Essentially, he is dedicating himself to me so that you have nothing to worry about. So Vishnu went. Dhruva was in trance of meditation. His trance broke. He was startled. He opened his eyes, and the Lord that he saw within his heart was now before him. He wanted to he offered obeisances again and again, wanted to offer prayers, but he was just a small boy. And he was bewildered by the circumstance, and therefore the Lord touched him with his conch shell, and his senses became totally enlivened, and we're going to hear some more what happened after that. He begins offering prayers. That's where we're beginning. It starts with chapter 9, canto 4, chapter 9, text 6. Then we'll just go a few verses in because the prayers are very rich and very wonderful and very important. So the power of prayer, the subtitle here is shifting the fulcrum of our consciousness. Now what that means is it's a phrase that I like. This is a little chart to indicate how prayer works. So there's a seesaw, like a child's playground. They have a seesaw. And seated on one side is a covered soul. Now, if the covered soul can manage to make their mind fixed with firm faith and determination, we found that Dhruva had both. He had faith in Narada. He had faith in his mother. And he had strong determination to get that kingdom and understood that Lord Vishnu alone is the one that could help him fulfill that desire. So his mind was fixed with firm faith and determination. And then the next step that's needed on the other side of that seesaw comes instructions from a spiritual master. And when those instructions from the spiritual master hit that side of the seesaw, then consciousness becomes elevated. But it doesn't work if your mind isn't fixed. And the mind can be fixed if there's firm faith and determination. And then those spiritual instructions elevate consciousness. And when consciousness becomes elevated, then the individual soul becomes decorated with nice spiritual qualities, which happened with Dhruva. He left behind his material ambitions and had only remaining spiritual ambitions, spiritual bhakti. So that's the power of prayer. So let's go back a little bit. Dhruva enters the forest. He can't find Vishnu, but Narada finds him, sent by the personality of Godhead. He touches Dhruva on the head and becomes benedicted by Narada's hand. He gets instructions to engage in bhakti process. He goes to Madhuvan to do that bhakti process. By the fifth month, he's like you see standing here on one leg, concentrating totally on Parabrahman, and circularly around him you see the mantra, Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. A nice illustration. In this way, Dhruva captured the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and the three worlds began to tremble. The demigods were choked up from the air of the universe was being stopped. They went to Lord Vishnu, who pacified them. He'll take care of the situation. He appeared before Dhruva. And then we heard at the end, although he was a small boy, wanting to offer prayers in suitable language, but he was inexperienced. And he couldn't adjust himself immediately. So, as you see in the painting, Lord Vishnu, with Garuda by his side, touched him on the forehead with his conch shell. And Dhruva could then be spiritually enlivened and ready to offer his prayers. And that's where the curtain opens. And we're now ready for the prayers. Now, for those who are lovers of the Srimad Bhagavatam, these are called Dhruva Stuti. They're 12 verses that are prayers by Dhruva. And the first of the prayer is Dhruva glorifying the touch of the Lord. Remember, he was touched by Narada's hand, now by the Lord's conch. So he's going to speak something specifically. His first prayer is about the touch of the Lord. Here's the verse, and I purposely made this color-coded. What's in green there, mama vacham imam, that's particularly his speech was enlivened, and prasuptam sanjiva yati, that's we're going to find that phrase next. It was enlivened, sanjiva yati, and it happened by the Lord Pravishya. He entered within Dhruva by the touch of the conch shell, and svadhamna. Take note of that svadhamna, because it's going to appear in the next verse too. Svadhamna indicates his internal potency. So the senses of Dhruva were spiritually enlivened by the spiritual potency, the internal potency, svadhamna. And here's the breakdown from our acharyas, prasuptam sanjivayati. The Lord breathes life into Dhruva's senses. It was as if his waking consciousness before that was that of a dead man, so to speak, and by the touch of the Lord, his life came into Dhruva's senses. Yona pravishya. by entering into me. No, his spiritual potency entered into Dhruva. And that's that sandhamna, svadhamna. Prasuptam sanjivati. You have enlivened my sleeping senses. Mama vacham imam means brought to life the power of speaking, vacha. Now your servant, so that my power of speaking can describe your form, qualities, and activities. So he's honoring what he's experiencing. He's experiencing being totally enlivened, his senses, and of course consciousness being totally enlivened by the touch of the Supreme Lord's conch shell. Another phrase in this verse is Akila Shakti Dhara. You are the master of both my knowledge acquiring senses and my working senses. And by the agency of his swadhamna, his internal potency. Now, in the morning class, we're reading from Brahma's Prayers, Canto 10, Chapter 14. And we're covering this topic really thoroughly. We're going to continue covering it tomorrow morning and finish it. But in Brahma's Prayers, he's speaking to Krishna about the good fortune of the residents of Vrindavan. But first he speaks about the mothers and the cows. For 1 month, they were directly feeding Krishna their own milk. How fortunate are the mothers and the cows? Next, how fortunate is Nanda and all the cowherd men, and for that matter, all the residents of Vrindavan, because they had Maitri, they had this transcendentally intense, friendly relation with one another. He was the Supreme Lord, who's the highest of the high, and so forth and so on. They're intimately associated with him. How fortunate are they? And then, not only the wives and the wives, the mothers of the cowherd boys, because Krishna became the cowherd boys for 1 month. The ladies, the men, and everybody so fortunate. The demigods were also fortunate. So this was the verse that we're discussing. You can look it up later if you want. 10:14:33. The demigods they're controlling deities of the senses. So this verse connects with Canto 10, Chapter 14. So the controlling deities of the senses, there's 5 knowledge acquiring senses and 5 working senses. That's 10. Mind, intelligence, and false ego, that makes 13. 2 of those 13 are discounted as vulgar because it's the rectum and the genital, the organ of evacuation and the organ of urination, and so they're not counted by Brahma. There's 11 controlling deities. They're experiencing, by the mercy of the residents of Vrindavan, who have spiritual forms, and because they have spiritual forms, they don't require controlling deities. They have spiritual forms. They have powers themselves. And their powers are directly coming from the Swarup Shakti of the Supreme Lord and his expansions in the spiritual realm. So they don't need controlling deities. They're beyond that. They're in the transcendental situation. So what Dhruva is saying is, you have made my senses like that. You have completely spiritualized my senses. I'm no longer in the jurisdiction of matter and the controlling deities of matter by your touch. That's what he's saying. You are the master of both my knowledge acquiring senses and my working senses, not the controlling demigods. For us, that's going to be in the very next verse. For us, everybody else, besides persons like Dhruva and the perfected souls of Vrindavan and so forth, the totally self-realized liberated souls, there's controlling deities that are material entities. But Dhruva is no longer in that jurisdiction by his svadhamna, by his own internal potency. And he's declaring it. He's realizing it. He's expressing his gratitude. And now all my senses are awake and I want to engage them in your service. Truly, O Lord, you are Antaryami, or Antaryami, put the two together, this supersoul. You give all knowledge, remembrance, or forgetfulness. Those of you that know the verse in Bhagavad Gita, chapter 15, text 15, Krishna says, situated in the heart of every living entity, I give knowledge, remembrance, and forgetfulness. Exactly what Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita. Dhruva is saying the same. I see you as the Antaryami. Mataksmitir Gyanam Apohanam Cha. Sarvasya Jahar Midi Sannivishto. Mataksmitir Gyanam Apohanam Cha. And now I've experienced this. So he didn't go to a Bhagavad Gita class, but he's experiencing it and saying it. And I therefore offer my obeisances unto you who are the supreme enjoyer. Pranan namo bhagavate purushaya tubhyam. Or in summary, this first verse of his prayers, my dear Lord, you are all powerful. Akila Shakti Dhara. After entering within me, Pravishya, you have enlivened all my sleeping senses, and he names them. My hands, legs, ears, touch sensation, life force, and especially my power of speech. You have made all of my senses spiritual. With no controlling deities, you're directly in control of my senses. Let me offer my respectful obeisances unto you. So he's glorifying the touch, and it's the experience that he's had and realization that he's had. Then next he's going to glorify the supremacy of the Lord himself. Now this is a picture of what Brahma saw. This is Brahma in the lower right corner, four heads. In the center is Krishna. And when Krishna showed the, all of the cowherd boys were Vishnu forms and all of the calves were Vishnu forms and all of it, what he saw, that's what that picture is. The Lord has all potencies and he's the source of everything. So as Brahma saw, Dhruva is also realizing. Ekastvam eva bhagavan idam atma shaktya. Ekastvam eva bhagavan. My Lord, you are the Supreme One. Idam atma shaktya, by your different energies, you appear differently in the spiritual and material worlds. That is to say, the Lord is one, but his appearance is variegated, and his appearance is variegated because of his different energies. Sometimes he can appear in his forearm form, sometimes he can appear in a two-arm form, sometimes he can appear in his universal form. They're all his forms, and he appears differently according to the circumstance. In the whole material world, by your own potency, there may be other sub-controllers, like demigods, or like controllers of the senses, etc. But without your enabling them, they cannot do anything. Now, we heard also this morning and yesterday morning, and going to continue tomorrow, this Brahma spirit just fits conveniently what we're discussing in the morning and this verse this evening. That is, when the universe is being created, or the ingredients for creation are being manifested by Vishnu, is kind of, it's something like an unfolding from gross to subtle to gross to more gross to more gross to more gross. Elements are manifest, and then senses that perceive those elements, and then the objects of the senses, and then the controlling demigods. Boom, 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 boom. And then the whole thing is manifest, and the demigods are ready to go. But they can't do anything because they're not empowered to do anything yet. Now, these aren't physical forms. These are subtle forms. They're forces that can't do anything without the driving force. So they go to Vishnu and pray, help. And he enters the universal form as Vasudev. Vasudev is the controlling deity of consciousness. Vasudev. Just like in the mind of Vasudev, Krishna appeared. Vasudev. Yes? And then the universal form woke up and arose. That the universe has yet to be built. These are just the ingredients and the subtle forms of demigods and so forth. It's very intriguing. It's very, very different than Big Bang cosmology that, you know, eighth grade science classes all over the world, they learn. It's a very different picture of how things came into being. Very different picture. There's a source of everything. It's not a singularity. It's the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And he has unlimited potencies, and he gradually, for purpose of creation, manifest those potencies and the controlling deities of the senses that perceive those sense objects. And then Vasudev enables them to do their thing. And then Brahma puts the universe together, modeling it after the universal form. It's really far out. In fact, in Brahma Samhita, it's described, or in the scriptures it's described, at the night of Brahma, there's a partial devastation, correct? There's the day of Brahma, and then there's the night of Brahma, and during the night of Brahma, the planetary systems, all the way from Swargaloka down, so the seven lower planetary systems, plus Bhuloka, Bhuvarloka, and Swargaloka, there's a partial devastation. The partial devastation happens this way. First, there's no water. Everything is dry and it burns fast. Then there's a fire and then there's a flood. The flood puts out the fire. But everything is now immersed in water. And that water, the fire, goes up to the heavenly planets. And the planets just above the heavenly planets, that's Maharloka, it's too hot. So they go to Tapaloka till the fire subsides. And the fire subsides with water, and there's a flood. It's very similar in the Old Testament, interestingly. Noah's Ark and the flood and all that. You may not know about those things, but the people in the Christian world out there, they know those things. There's a flood, and Noah's Ark saves all the different species and so forth. And then when the flood subsides, it's morning for Brahma. He does his sadhana. He meditates on the universal form and he reconstructs the universe up to Maharloka. Every day. That's his, you know, he does his sadhana and then he goes to the office. He does his duty. And he does so according to the plan of the universal form. The universal form is a plan. It's like a blueprint. It's not the universe yet. It's just a plan, a subtle plan. And then he builds. And because he's very intelligent, he knows the whole thing and gets the picture every day. He has a long life. And at the end of his life, there's a total annihilation. So, without your enabling them, sub-controllers cannot do anything. The demigods can't do anything unless Vasudev enters into the universal form, and then the universe, the Virat Rup rises, and then things can start to happen. Until Vasudev comes, nothing happens. There's the Vasudev of the universes, there's the Vasudev within each body. The Paramatma is within each body. And without the soul and the super soul, the lump of matter doesn't do anything. The senses don't do anything. The whole material world doesn't do anything, even though they're subcontrollers. So they're empowered by Vasudev. That's what Dhruva's saying. He's a little boy. He's only 5 years old. He understands all this stuff. And he didn't even go to a Bhagavad Gita class. He just has illumination. You create the total energy of the material world by your external potency. So there's the material cause and there's the remote cause. Upadan Maya. Anyway, there's terms in Sanskrit. There's the remote cause, that's Mahavishnu. He's glancing. And what he's glancing at is at Prakriti or Pradhan. He creates through her by the external potency. But the external potency doesn't do anything without his glance. Without the touch of spirit, matter doesn't move. The classic example is a potter and the potter's wheel and the clay. There's the wheel, there's the clay, and there's the potter. And the wheel and the clay can sit there a long time without a potter. It's going to do nothing. So the remote cause of the clay pot is the potter, not the clay or the wheel. But the potter engages the clay. So the Supreme Lord, this is Dhruva speaking to Vishnu, you create the total energy of the material world by your external potency, by his glancing. Okay, then what happens? You entered into everything after he creates it by his own potency, then he enters into it as Paramatma. Tad asad guneshu. Both the moving and the non-moving. He's just a 5-year-old boy, and he's understanding all of this about creation, which us big kids don't so easily understand. We just need the touch of Lord Vishnu's hand, I guess. Then, just as fire entering into wood of different shapes burns brilliantly in different varieties. So the unknown is made easier to understand by something known. So here's the something known. The something known is fire, fire in the form of sunlight, because sunlight is fire. Sunlight enters into wood. You can say by the photosynthesis process, but it enters into wood. So it's known. There's wood of different types, and wood of different types has different shapes and has different colors. The fire that comes out, the wood is of different color. The fire that comes out is of different color. Different color. Sometimes orange, sometimes red, sometimes blue. It's the fire that's in within wood comes out of different color or different shapes, burning brilliantly in different ways. So just as fire enters into wood in different and comes out in different ways, super soul enters within all living beings, and all living beings have different bodies and different personalities and different species, and you know, there's all kinds of differences. But it's all resting on one thing, the soul and super soul. The creation is his prakriti. He creates it, he enters into it. Then the demigod controllers of the Indriyas are controlled by you, which is same point as made just a few minutes ago. There are controllers of the creation, but the controllers of creation are controlled by you, Lord Vishnu. The senses of your devotees, now this is going back to the first verse. The senses of your devotees, the residents of Vrindavan, or Dhruva, the purified souls, the senses of your devotees by your mercy focus on you and become spiritual since they are completely filled with your presence, svadhamna, or by internal potency. Then others, the senses of others, however, focus on maya alone and become only material senses. Maya, kyaya. That's one of the terms in this verse. They're material senses that require material controllers, or they can't function. And that is controllers of those controllers. And that's Lord Vishnu. So, he has been spiritualized by touch, and he, the same Supreme Lord, engages in creation, and then the senses of the living entities are controlled by the controllers. Now he's going to glorify the friendship of the Lord. Just a few minutes ago, we discussed in Brahma's prayers, he was appreciating all the residents of Vrindavan have a maitri, a relationship of friendship. It's not Sakhirasa like Arjun was the friend of Krishna. This word maitri is a more general term, meaning having a favorable or friendly disposition towards, like his father, like the gopis, like the cowherd boyfriends, like the cows. They all have this favorable distribution, favorable regard or sentiment towards Krishna. So Dhruva is going to glorify that. You are a giver. Here's the verse, text 8. In the first line, tvad dataya. In the beginning, you gave Brahma and the Kumaras knowledge, and thus they could see and understand the entire universe. That's even before there was a universe. Brahma could see. But he had knowledge. Just like Dhruva is a little boy, he doesn't see the whole universe, but he's understanding it by his knowledge being awakened. Just as a person awakens from sleep and visualizes his immediate duties, isn't it? So, similarly, you are the only shelter of all persons who desire liberation, apavarga, shadanam tava padamulam, and you are the friend, artha bandho, you are the friend of all who are distressed. That's people at the bottom down there. Four types of this verse, the verse from Bhagavad Gita, four types of pious people render service unto Krishna. That's what that illustration at the bottom. Four types of pious people. How therefore can a learned person who has perfect knowledge ever forget you? Well, someone has perfect knowledge cannot. And there are persons that don't have perfect knowledge and they easily can because they don't have perfect knowledge. Or when you have perfect knowledge, something, there's a symptom of that perfect knowledge, and that's gratitude. And that's what Dhruva is feeling. He's feeling very strong sense of grateful to his mother, grateful to Narada, and grateful to the Supreme Lord, because his mother helped him find Narada, Narada helped him find Vishnu, and Vishnu enabled him to awaken his perfect knowledge, and he's very grateful to all of them. We had over the Christmas, or we called it a winter retreat. I don't know if you had a chance to see or hear any of that. The theme was gratitude during difficult times. It's been difficult times, right? And how to hold gratitude in the heart during difficult times. Well, when you have a sense of having received something very wonderful, it's easy to feel gratitude. I mean, a little child can receive something from a parent and they just take it and they don't feel too much other than busy themselves and eating something or playing with something or doing something or something. But when gratitude enters the heart, they recognize they received so much, then, you know, a perfect knowledge can never forget Krishna unless ungrateful. So he's feeling enlightened and, as a result, very grateful to the persons mentioned. This is a paraphrase summary. Oh, Master! Lord Brahma is fully surrendered unto you. In the beginning, you gave him knowledge, and thus he could see and understand the entire universe just as a person awakens from sleep and visualizes his immediate duties. You are the only shelter of all persons who desire liberation. Then you are the friend of all who are distressed. How, therefore, can a learned person who has perfect knowledge ever forget you? So now he's going to move the third verse. He's going to move into filled with feelings of gratitude to move the other side, or the other side of the panscale, or naturally how one feels when feeling grateful. It is very humble, genuinely humble. So before he was thinking of getting a kingdom, and many people think of material prosperity as the goal of their life. Foolish person such as me desire benedictions from you for sense gratification. That's the essence of what he's saying here. Now he's given it up, but he was certainly desiring enjoyment of a kingdom and the pride of getting back at his stepmother and so forth. Sense gratification is available, this is Prabhupada, is available even for those who live in hellish conditions. Nunam Vishmuta Matayas. Persons who worship you simply for the sense gratification of this bag of skin are certainly influenced by your illusory energy. Certainly Maya has stolen their intelligence, like me, who worship you for a kingdom. Not wise. In spite of having you, who are like Archanti, Kalpaka, Tarum, a desire tree, the cause of liberation from birth and death, foolish persons such as me desire benedictions for you, from you, for sense gratification which is available even for those who live in hellish conditions. Prabhupada would hammer on this point again and again and again, because the picture of the universe is in this middle planetary region. It's a place of fruitive activities. Heaven is a place of piety. Hell is a place of suffering. And this middle planetary region is a place of fruitive activities. Goodness, ignorance, and passion. And passion says, enjoy. To enjoy, you get stuff. Because when you get stuff, you can enjoy. So there's fruitive activities, you get stuff so you can enjoy. That's the nature of this place. And it's really hard to get another picture in the mind because that's the nature of the place that we're in. Everywhere you look. And the advancement of an individual or a group of individuals or a nation is in terms of what? You know, gross national product or the how sophisticated the facilities for enjoyment are. And you're doing well if you have facilities for material enjoyment. That's the standard. And if you don't, there's something wrong with you. Your failure or something, something. And you know, that's just the paradigm. So it's very, very important. It's in the Bhagavatam a lot, and it's in Prabhupada's teachings a lot. That picture has to be replaced with something else. But you can't replace it with something else if you're holding on to the picture. Or using another metaphor, if you're rowing a boat and you leave the anchor down, you're not going to go anywhere, no matter how much you row the boat. That's Bhakti Siddhanta's example. Foolish persons such as me desire benedictions from you for sense gratification, which is available even for those in hellish conditions. Here's a summary from Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, then his commentary. Those who worship you, giver of freedom from birth and death, for insignificant results, as if you were a material desire tree, and through a corpse-like body of human form, desire happiness arising from sense objects, which is available to lower animals, are certainly cheated of their intelligence by your maya. Maya pratigyana. It's right in Bhagavad Gita, found here in the Bhagavatam in further detail. The fourth type of devotee, the artarti bhakta, is me. You know that verse? Four types of pious people render devotional service unto me. Chatur vidha bhajante mam jana sukriti. Those who are pious. Four types of pious people render devotional service unto me. It's from Bhagavad Gita. And so arta, artarti. Yeah, okay, good. Jigyasu. Okay, you know. Okay, good. So one of those, the artarti, Dhruva saying, that's me. I wanted material gain. I approached you for material gain. I'm one of those people. He is the lowest and most foolish, certainly. Nunam, their intelligence has been cheated. Who are they? They worship you, who give freedom from birth and death, bhavapyaya, for trifling results, anya hetoho. Thus, they worship you as a desire tree. They desire happiness, upabhogyam, through a body comparable to a corpse. This should not be desired. That happiness arising from relation to sense objects is available in births of pigs. Narake. All right. So what should one desire for? And maybe you should desire for heavenly enjoyment. So no. Dhruva's appreciating the superiority of the happiness of bhakti. And this is the fourth of the prayers that we're going to be covering just now. There's a nice illustration. There's a devotee walking along a path, the bhakti path that reaches the lotus feet of Krishna. Although one may be elevated to the heavenly planets, he falls down in due course of time. That's the next prayer. The bliss derived from devotional service cannot be compared to that experienced by jnanis and yogis. The prayer reads, my Lord, the transcendental bliss derived from meditation upon your lotus feet, tavapada padma, dhyanad. Or hearing about your glories from pure devotees, bhavajjana katha shravanena vasyat, is so unlimited that it is far beyond the stage of brahmananda, put that in bigger letters. What's Brahmananda? Wherein one thinks himself merged in the impersonal Brahman as one with the Supreme. Ananda means pleasure, and Brahman, the Brahmananda is the pleasure of Brahman. Merged to whatever that happiness is, far beyond. Since Brahmananda is also defeated by the transcendental bliss derived from devotional service, then what to speak of the temporary blissfulness of elevating oneself to the heavenly planets, which is ended by the separating sword of time? Although one may be elevated to the heavenly planets, he falls down in due course of time. A feather may rise in the air, but it's also going to fall. This phrase in the verse, antakasi bhuvatat, by the sword of time, one is cut from his exalted position within this material world, and he comes down again, just like patatam vimanat, the airplane, which, although it goes up, must come down again when it runs out of fuel. That's Prabhupada's explanation. Or another place where this is referred to is in the sixth canto Bhagavatam, where it's spoken about or spoken by Brahma, the eighth canto, excuse me. Nirvana Sukarnavaya, the bliss of realizing the personal form of God is superior to the happiness of realizing his impersonal aspect, or nirvana. Nirvana, sukha, the happiness of nirvana, is far, far surpassed by the happiness of realizing the personal form of God. The Supreme Lord is smaller than the atom, and so large that no one can measure him. That's part of what Brahma is saying. So it's not just, you know, mind teasing. He's simultaneously anor and nime. He's very, very small, smaller than the atom. He fits within atoms, the super soul within every atom. And how small is an atom? He's smaller than that, and simultaneously large, so large, no one can measure him. Simultaneously, not he gets big and gets small and big and small and vacillates back and forth, but simultaneously both. And in this way, everything is resting within you. That's Brahma speaking to the personality of Godhead. Happiness of one's relationship with you far surpasses any of the happiness one knows from Brahman happiness, then what to speak of heavenly happiness. So that's the end for this evening. And we'll continue tomorrow on prayers, the same theme, that the picture is Dhruva has moved from being very selfish to the position of being completely absorbed in Krishna. And what about us? That's a long arrow ride to get there. So while we're in this liminal space, or the space in between where we are and where we want to be, what are we doing about getting to where we want to be? And what are our opportunities to become touched by the Lord, like Dhruva was touched by the Lord? Or we heard this nice expression from Lord Brahma about, you know, there's the meditation that says there's hearing, just like you have a Srimad Bhagavatam said in the house. Yes? Yes. So by absorption in the topics about Krishna that are within the Bhagavatam, or message from Krishna in Bhagavad Gita, that sound vibration has potency to, on the one hand, cleanse, and the other hand, attract. Cleanse from the distraction to be enjoyers of the objects of this temporary world and finding happiness over there. And finding happiness in terms of the connection with the personality of Godhead by consciousness. Same activities, cooking and working and this thing and that thing. But the consciousness, if the consciousness changes, that the standard of happiness and what's meaningful and important shifts, that's this fulcrum shifting idea, then that's the opportunity of this human form of life. If we don't take that opportunity, then it's repeated birth and death. And if we do take the opportunity, we're at least advancing ourselves closer to the beyond birth and death stage. And Krishna will help us. It's not just our efforts, but Krishna will see our efforts and Krishna will help us. You know, like a loving parent with a small child to help the child learn to walk or whatever the parent sees the child trying to do. Krishna's like that, a loving personality, and he'll help. So we're not alone. And we have other devotees to be with. And then there's this wonderful wisdom that's just being gifted to us to make that connection stronger. So that's what are our opportunities to become touched by the Lord. His name, his messages, his devotees, his deity form, his prasadam, and various ways that we can feel gratitude for that spiritual connection. And you nourish that gratitude and it grows into love. That's how it works. Love of God grows starting with gratitude, recognizing the gift that's been given to us. So Prahlad is helping us to do that. Let's see if there's some discussion. We'll start with our hosts here in the room, and then we'll go to the online people. Anything? No? Yes.
Hare Krishna Maharaj, what happens to Dhruva Loka, the night of Brahmas?
What happens to Dhruva during the night of Brahma?
Dhruva Loka.
Oh, it's there even after the cosmic annihilation, not only during the night. So, nice question. The position of Dhruva Loka is the topmost part of the heavenly region, Swarga. Above Dhruva Loka is Maharloka, Janaloka, Tapaloka, etc. But Dhruva Loka isn't annihilated during the night of Brahma. It's not even annihilated when there's, because it's a spiritual planet. It exists forever. It's a nice place. No, there's no material bodies. There's nothing temporary there. He returned to that place in a spiritual form. It's described. We'll get to that. His body completely transformed into spiritual energy. He went, so did his mother. We'll get there.
Thank you, Maharaj.
Okay. Okay, we'll come back. Anything over here? Okay. Online? Let's see if there's some online topics.
This is from Shari Mataji from morning, which I missed. Do we need to separately offer prayers to Lord Aniruddha if we need intelligence, similarly intelligence, and similarly to Sankarshan to remove our false ego?
This is from the morning class, and the answer is, well, the question is, they're presiding deities of the senses, and there's lords of the intelligence and the mind. Do we need to pray separately to those lords of the intelligence and the mind? And the answer is no, because Krishna is the source of them all. Just pray to Krishna.
There are two questions from Sri Radhika Mataji. The first one is, related to the topic of shifting the fulcrum of our consciousness, I found Sachinandan Maharaj's New Year message that you sent out yesterday to be very inspiring. Maharaj wrote, the more we lose touch with our spiritual goal, our North Star, the more our spiritual practices feel like obligations or even burdens. We even get caught up in compensating our emptiness by feverishly working towards projects that then become excuses. Will you please elaborate on how projects become excuses?
Well, he said it. And elaborate on what he said. It just means fruitive work. If we don't have Krishna consciousness, then we're in this bhu-loka realm where passion rules. And when passion rules, we just get busy, and our happiness is being busy. But it's not really happiness, just being busy. It's just not feeling miserable because you're idle and miserable. So we just get busy doing something. It's just filling in a space. But the space that it's filling in is forgetting what our goal is. If you forget Krishna, what do you have? You have darkness. So getting busy is just another darkness, another type of darkness. So we don't think about how, we forgot who we are and forgot what our purpose of existence is. So bhakti requires being clear who we are and what our mission of life is. And if we don't have that clear, we're just going to get busy doing stuff.
And Mataji's second question is, I find the fact that sense gratification is also available on the hellish planets to be very confusing.
No, it's not. Go ahead.
So the question is, my assumption is hell is only for the purpose of inflicting suffering and pain. Will you please clarify?
Well, there's senses and there's sense objects, and from if we look at the life, Prabhupada gives the example of a worm and stool. From our perspective, stool is not nice. Hogs like it. They won't eat halava, they'll eat stool. Give them a plate of halava, they'll make some noise and go somewhere else till they find some stool. Then the worm in stool, Prabhupada uses this example. If you pull a worm out of stool, you're doing an act of kindness, and it'll look around and wiggle itself back into the nice warm pile of stool, because that's happiness for the worm. So that looked like happiness. To us, it's hellish. It's not like persons who are in the undergoing hellish planets think, oh, this is nice. My limbs are being chopped and so forth, boiled in oil and things. But it's, there's no higher consciousness there. So all that's left is the senses contacting sense objects. To us, it's miserable. To us it's hellish. To them it's just existence, I guess. I don't want to go and find out. We have a question back here. Yeah. Here comes back to Mike. We have our little protocol of doing sanitizing things.
So we are sent here on the earth to materially enjoying.
What's that?
We are sent on earth.
Could you take the mask?
We are sent here on the earth to materially enjoyment.
No.
No. Right. So why don't we have that consciousness that why we are here?
Well, we're not sent so that, rather, when the living entity desires, the Supreme Lord situated within the heart of the living entity recognizes what the living entity desires. Now, just like, you know, a loving parent may say to a child, something, you know, don't play in the street. Is it because they're interested in the protection of the child? But sometimes the child will ignore what the parent says and go play in the street. Maybe they'll get squashed. Or maybe they'll not get squashed. But, you know, they're at their risk because they're not doing, not abiding by what. So we're not exactly sent to the material world. When the living entity, it's not a chronological event, it's a disposition, wanting to be Purusha, wanting to be enjoyer of Prakriti, material nature, then material nature is provided. So your question now is, when we're here, now that we're here, why don't we have the consciousness of this is foolish?
Right.
And it's because we're deluded by Maya.
Mm-hmm.
The deluding potency permits us to forget who we are and think that we're somebody that we're not. And we're a Purusha. We're the enjoyer of Prakriti.
Mm-hmm.
Let's go. The force that permits that to happen is the force of Maya. It's illusion. Living entity is, you know, in la-la land, thinking, this is it. Enjoyment time. And then, but let me try it differently. And just like a donkey, just keep, and in under the influence of Maya, continuing on and on. On and on, and it can go endlessly. And the opportunity to end the endlessness of repeated trying to be the enjoyer of Prakriti is knowledge. Knowledge and devotion. Knowledge combined with devotion can carry us out of the la-la land situation. You can wake up and say, wait a minute. That's not who I am. It's not really what real happiness is to begin with. In principle, there is another, so by association with a lamp of knowledge, then darkness of illusion can be dismissed. And then our wholesome activities can be restored. But we don't because the force of Maya, the deluding potency of the Lord. He doesn't like to do that. He wants us to be happy. But we're like this rebellious little people. No, I want to be an enjoyer. Lifetime after lifetime. And throughout our lifetime. Lifetime after life. So it's this deluding potency, Maya. Because we wanted it. It was really a dumb wish, but we wanted it. I want to be Purusha. There is already a Purusha. No, I want to be Purusha. Rebelliousness towards the Supreme. Deluding potency covers us, and then we try to be enjoyers. It doesn't work out. Yehi samsparsha jaboga dukha yonaya evate in Bhagavad Gita. We want bhoga and we get something else. Dukkha. Dukkha. Yoni, dukkha, Yoni means a womb, the place of birth. The place of dukkha is wanting to be an enjoyer. That's the womb. And then comes dukkha. Dukkha is born from that mother. Okay?
Yeah, thank you.
Hare Krishna Maharaj, I have one question. Prahlada Maharaj and Dhruv, they both have different desire.
Like
Prahlada Maharaj, it's already pure devotee, right? And Dhruv Maharaj started with the material desire.
He's at the bottom.
Yeah, but they both get liberation. So, I mean, how they both get liberation at the end?
Oh, at the end.
At the end, after
everything.
Yeah, after everything.
Well, at the end of the Dhruva story, we're going to hear it, but what happens is a Vaikuntha Vimana descends and takes him to Dhruvaloka. And he says, wait a minute, I don't want to go without my mother. And the Vaikuntha Vasis, the Vimana pilots, said, look over there, see that other Vimana, that's your mom. She's going too. She'll see you there. So that's what happens to Dhruva. He goes to Dhruvaloka, which is a spiritual planet within this universe, or Svetadweep within this universe. That's where he goes, Dhruvaloka. And Prahlad what we hear in the fifth canto Bhagavatam is Prahlad is in one of the varshas of the central island. Antardweep. No, I don't want to get too technical. There's different tracts of land in the, we're in Bhartvarsha. And there's Ilavrati Varsha and Hari Varsha. So Hanuman is in one of those. He's in Hari Varsha where he's worshipping. He doesn't go back to Ayodhya. He stays in that place and he's engaged in worship of Ram. And Prahlad is engaged in the worship of Lord Nrisimhadev. He lives a really long life and that's where he is, worshipping Lord Nrisimhadev. He's very happy. Don't worry about him. He's happy.
Thank you.
But eventually, when the universe is over, he's going to go to the spiritual abode where Lord Nrisimhadev has his form and his associates and everything.
Even Dhruv Maharaj also? I mean, after...
He asked that question. Dhruvalokas, during the night of Brahma, it exists. And at the end of the cosmic annihilation, the whole shebang is withdrawn. And that's still existing and Dhruva's there.
Okay. So it's forever.
Spiritual form.
Okay.
Okay. Back to the online questions. Oh, okay. Could you get out of the way? You'll be right behind you. Yeah. I can hear you better without your mask. Powerful microphone. Better not drop it, it'll explode.
So in Bhakti Shastri, we have been discussing this Ashtanga Yoga, 6th chapter.
Okay.
And Krishna says that the ultimate destination of Ashtanga Yoga is also Him, Matpara. So, which leads to Bhakti Yoga.
Yes.
Ashtanga Yoga.
When it's done properly, yes.
Yeah. So, there was a question asked in the, I know he asked yesterday, but like the yogis who are like practicing Ashtanga Yoga, like For example, maybe Durvasa Muni. Are they worshipping Krishna?
Or no.
They are Lord Shiva.
Well, he's not a Krishna Bhakta. Durvasa Muni is not a Krishna Bhakta. And so what's the...
The question is, Ashtanga Yogi is supposed to be worshipping or...
Well, they may be fixing them.
Fixing the mind.
There are different stages of it also. And even amongst those who get to the stage of fixing their mind on Paramatma, there's different destination depending upon the degree of bhakti. It's not a box and everything goes into the box and, you know, it's quite fluid, or there's ranges of bhakti. To go to the spiritual world, to go to the Vaikuntha realm, there must be bhakti. And that one can fix their mind upon Paramatma with lesser degrees or greater degrees of bhakti. Okay? And then there's different destinations depending. Okay. Yes? He has something. No? Okay.
This question is from Vijayalakshmi Mataji, Lingaraju Prabhu Sunita Mataji's sister-in-law. If Dhruva planet is in the highest position in heavenly planets?
No. It's above the heavenly, let me just edit the words that she spoke. The structure of the universe is in vertical dimension. And there's lower, middle, and upper planetary systems. And the position of Dhruva Loka is at the topmost position of the heavenly realm. It's not a heavenly planet. But in the vertical situation of planets, it's at the topmost position in that vertical dimension. So it's not a higher heavenly planet, in other words.
So the question is, if Dhruva planet is in that highest position, then sometimes we hear some local pundits saying that we can see Dhruva star on some days.
Sure.
Okay, so the question is it true? How is it possible to see?
Why not? He can make his planet visible, why not? You can see the deity form, you can, you know, why not? It's a luminary in the sky. Yeah.
Mahati Kirti Mataji's question is, who are the residents of Dhruva Loka?
I don't know. Besides Dhruva and the personality of Godhead, there's got to be some other residents. They do stuff together.
Who
are the residents in Vaikuntha? How would you describe the residents of Vaikuntha? There's residents of Vaikuntha. Who are they? What's their names? What's their forms? And what's their activities? We don't have that. You know, there's Vaikuntha. You see pictures made by artists, but you know, there's residents in that realm. Hare Krishna.
And her second question, Mahati Kirti Mataji's second question is, how should I cultivate and maintain my gratitude?
Cultivate gratitude and maintain gratitude. I was supposed to send you a document, but you didn't remind me. The document I was supposed to send you this morning was the abodes of Yamaraj. But you remind me, and I'll send you that one, and I'll also send you this document that's the, you know, cultivation of gratitude. I've sent that out several times. It was... Okay. whoever's asking this question, just go to the link that has the Vyasa Puja documents, and it's there, the gratitude cultivation document.
This question is from Amara Mataji. In liminal space, how to keep up the enthusiasm of taking focused, planned, and organized steps forward without getting confused or overwhelmed about our goals?
For those of you in the room that don't know what this term liminal space means, I'll explain. Liminal space means just like here's a door to the garage or the outside, and there's a door to the front porch. There's a little strip of wood between the door and the outside and the inside. That's called a limen. A limen means a place of transition between this and that. Carpentry terms, that's what a limen is. For life terms, it's between where you are and where you want to be. That space is liminal space. So, devotion, a life of devotion also has where we are, where we want to be. It can be your career or, I'm thinking, it keeps coming in my mind, about a four-year-old girl I was attending a home program. This girl was like really attentive. Little kids are often fidgety. She was really attentive. And just like, wow. So at the end of the class, I just spontaneously asked her, what do you want to be when you grow up? And she said, pediatrician. I said, when I was small, I wanted to be a doctor, but I didn't even know what a pediatrician was. And then I said, how about a pediatrician that wants to please Krishna? She said, yeah, that's what I want to be. So there's a liminal space in between being a four-year-old and being a pediatrician. That's liminal space in career development or social becoming what you want to become, you know, the self-help books and all that stuff. So there's a gap between where we are and where we want to be. That's this liminal space. So her question is how to stay on track with your, when you're in that liminal space, keeping the goals in mind. That's the question. Well, regularly revisit what your goal is, not just put yourself on automatic pilot, because chances are you'll get distracted and the goal won't be in the front anymore. It'll be somewhere you forgot it. So regularly renew, ask yourself these core questions that we're generally too busy to ask ourselves, like what's important to you? Who are you? What's your mission in life? What's the purpose? In between birth and death, what fits in that in-between space? What's it all about? You know, those kind of core life questions, and ask them regularly. With that inquisitive spirit, read the scriptures and the light will go on. And you keep refining and refining and realigning. That's, you know, it can't be lazy to keep your goals in mind. And make sure that they're not just, dreamy. Make sure that they're realistic, but they're also aligned with scripture. That's a lot of steps, but those are things that will help you keep the liminal space transition, you know, with clear focus. And I think we should end. We're done. Okay, let's do them quickly.
This is from Ruchira Mataji. Since Dhruva Loka is a spiritual planet within the material universe, is there a Dhruva Loka in every universe?
Well, we don't know that. Intuitively, yes, but we don't know that. there's certainly the abode of Shri Radakshai Vishnu within every universe, but whether there's a dhruva on that planet or not, we don't know for sure. Intuitively, yes, but we don't know for sure.
This is from Sanchari. On the topic of the universal form being a blueprint for creation, is it the entirety of creation that is housed, or is it just for this material universe that our Brahma is in charge of?
There's a universal form for each universe.
And Kasturi Manjari Mataji, how to get over the feelings of insecurity in relationships with devotees and Krishna?
Oh, that's another topic, insecurity. Security comes from your relationship with Krishna. And the opposite, that when that's weak, then there's insecurity because nothing is certain. We don't know who we are. We don't know what's what. We don't have confidence in, you can have false confidence, and that goes up in a puff of smoke very quickly by circumstance. Unless you just, you know, bluff your way through life, but that doesn't last either. So it comes from the relationship with Krishna. Okay, that's it. We're done. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Thank you.